Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Napa Know-How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and the Step Back. Joining me today is the co-host of the Locked On Bulls podcast. It's Sean Hyken. Sean, what's going on?
Not too much, Chris. The team I cover is having a lot less interesting of a training camp than yours. Our big storyline right now is Lauri Markkanen going to play some center alongside Nico Mirotic? Like that's where we're at. I don't know about the Cavs. I think they have a little bit more going on.
I mean, just a bit. Just you know, Dwayne.
I mean,
Wade
they waived Jacory Williams today. Like that's a huge story. I got that press release. It's like, wow, that's a game changer.
Yeah, we're going to pencil him in, I think, on the Kent charge to maybe start it forward. But no, Dwayne Wade, Cavalier, it's but two-fourths of the banana boat is now in Cleveland. Comes at a time where Wade, A, is not going to be wearing number three anymore. He's going to be wearing
what
number
What was that
nine.
About? Like,
Isaiah has number three. So
right,
Isaiah,
but don't you think, like, normally I would think, like, just based on seniority, Wade could, you know, go to Isaiah and be like, yo, give me number three, but... Maybe.
I don't even think they. I think LeBron was like, "What can I get him nine?" Like, and he got nine, which was Chetty Osman's number. Like, he's a rookie, and he's just like already been buried in the depth chart. And he's.
I wonder if he paid Chetty Osman any money for it, because last year when he signed in Chicago, he made Doug McDermott switch from 3 to 11, and from what I can tell, he never gave. Because usually when this kind of stuff happens, like a play, like the veteran player will like give the rookie something for the number, like. Or something like that, like buy him a watch or something, or you know, you're just like a Rolex, no big deal to you know to throw that around. But like, apparently Wade like didn't give Doug anything. Like that's from what I would understand. So like, I'm interested in his rationale for why nine. Like what's that about?
Yeah, and especially because Chetty's like just got to the U.S. and his first experience in this environment doesn't really do much at media day. It was really just didn't have his own scrum or anything like that, and then. He has to change his jersey number, like, 2 days later. So.
First day, he comes into training camp. I'm Dwayne Wade. You're going to have to give me your number. Like, yeah. I'm a future Hall of Famer, like, multiple-time All-Star Finals MVP. You have to give me your jersey number, Rook. Like, that's...
and I wonder if they didn't want to really push Isaiah and try to...
Right.
I think they really want to make him comfortable, and I think that's a big thing.
Because, I mean, Isaiah's whole thing is he is always, like, because of the trade and because he was the 60th pick and because he's been traded a million times and, like, Sacramento didn't want him and then Phoenix didn't want him and then he does as much as he does for Boston and they still trade him. Like, he kind of, you know, feels disrespected, like, at every single turn. And so I'll bet it was, like... He comes in, they talk about, like, oh, no, you're the missing piece to this championship. We traded Kyrie Irving for you. Oh, hey, here's Dwayne Wade, who's 36 years old. Like, can you give up your number for him? He already had to not wear the number that he wore in Boston because Iman Shumpert has that number.
Yeah, and Shump, you know, would be someone they would move on from in an instant if
they
could.
If they could trade him, right.
Yeah. And all these teams not having cap space now really makes that difficult to move on from that $10 million. But... Dwayne Wade, he comes in, he gets the buy from the Bulls, gave up a decent amount of money to come to Cleveland and to become a free agent and then pick where he wants to go. Picks Cleveland. What was Dwayne Wade last year with the Bulls?
He was kind of what you would expect from him at this point. Like I don't think he's, like, there obviously are jokes out there about, like, how washed up everybody, like, he was not as bad last year as people, you know, say he was, but he's also very clearly not Dwayne Wade from, like, 2006 to 2012 or 13 when he was in his absolute prime. Like, he still has nights where he can, you know, go off like that and score 30 points, but he's at a point in his career, he can't do that every night anymore. And, like, I actually think this is a great fit, partly because the Cavs are in a position where they don't care at all about the regular season or, frankly, like, the first two rounds of the playoffs. Like, if they get the 4 seed in the East, like, who cares? And, like, they basically have to, like, start trying halfway in the conference finals and make sure that they're at full strength when they play the Warriors in the finals. I'm presuming that that's what happens again. And, you know, Dwayne Wade is also at the point in his career where, you know, he's got to sit out back-to-backs. He maybe has to cut down his minutes. You know, he and LeBron can go to Miami together in January for their sabbatical. Like, that's kind of where he is in his career. He can still have flashes of, like, the prime Dwayne Wade, at least on the offensive end. He's not nearly the defender that he was 5 or 6 years ago when he was one of the best defensive guards in NBA history, or at least in the modern era. He, you know, he doesn't have, you know, frankly, the effort's not really there anymore because I think just his body is not up to that anymore. But, you know, he still has, you know, he's still fun to watch. He still, you know, can get to the basket. He's never learned how to shoot. There was like a 2-week stretch at the very beginning of the regular season last year where he was like, oh, I'm going to learn how to shoot threes now. Like, I've been working with Fred Hoiberg on my shot. I'm going to take 3-pointers. And that was the thing for like 2 weeks. And then it just kind of wasn't anymore.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy for me because I think there are what he will be with the Cavs, I think, really depends on what sort of role he ends up being comfortable with and what sort of role they put him into. I'm not the only person to say this. I'm definitely not the first person to say this, but I think for where he's at in his career, I think he's best served really kind of serving as a sixth man in a lot of ways. I think he's best really helping the Cavs solve an issue they've had in this LeBron era in being good when LeBron is off the floor. You can look at any on-off number with LeBron off the floor. They've cratered when he's been off the floor. Some of that is just the mentality. Wade comes from having experience of knowing that you can't let up when LeBron's off the floor. He still is a guy that maybe he's not peak Dwayne Wade anymore. He's not all-star level Dwayne Wade anymore. He's a guy that teams have to respect on offense that can do a lot of damage in the pick and roll, that's going to get a lot of mid-range shots. Even if those aren't uber valuable shots now, he's going to get those shots and make them at a good clip. The three-point shooting is a concern, I think. You know, I don't think last year at a slightly higher number per game and at a decent-ish percentage for what he's done for his career, I don't think that indicates that he's actually going to be a good three-point shooter. I don't think the Cavs can expect him to be that, but I think if he can ball handle, he can lead second units, and he can do damage without LeBron on the floor, I think that's a really good fit for him. I think the question is, are they going to try to make him a starter, or are they going to be able to have him come off the bench? Ultimately, I think that a version of the Cavs starting lineup they've used the last couple of years, where it's point guard X, and in this case it's Isaiah when he's healthy, Derrick Rose until he comes back, keeping JR as the starting two because of, for spacing purposes, LeBron, Love, Thompson, and then you come in and you can have second units that kind of revolve around Kevin Love, and you play Dwayne Wade with Kevin Love, and you stagger things that way. That to me makes the most sense. I don't know if they're going to go that way. It's too early to tell. Lou has to figure this out still. But I think him in that role, to me, where he's at in his career and what the Cavs sort of need, I think that makes the most sense. We just don't know if that's what they're going to do.
Well, I actually read an interesting piece from Tim Cato at SB Nation yesterday once the news broke that he was going to go to Cleveland that kind of suggested that, at least until Isaiah gets back, maybe Dwayne Wade should be the starting point guard instead of Derrick Rose, which I thought was kind of interesting because, you know, being the point guard, like, he can handle the ball, but, like, frankly, like who's really the point guard? When LeBron is on the floor, LeBron is going to be usually bringing the ball up the floor. Like, it's like, I kind of like the idea of having him do that. I agree with you, you have to keep JR on the floor because you have to have the shooting, and JR is also a better defender at this point in his career than Dwayne Wade is. But, what do you think about that idea of having Wade start? Wade has never really been, you know, somebody who's been willing to come off the bench, and that's actually a good reason why, you know, it's a good thing that the Bulls kind of got this buyout done now, because let's say November or December, Zach LaVine comes back. Zach LaVine is the future of the franchise in their mind because he was the centerpiece of the Jimmy Butler trade. They have to start him, but then you have to go to Dwayne Wade and say, hey, you're coming. You're a future Hall of Famer. You're a, you know, one of the all-time great players. You're coming off the bench for a 22-year-old coming off a torn ACL. I feel like because, you know, LeBron's his boy and they're, you know, on a title-contending team, or at least a team that's the favorite to win the East, I still have questions about whether they're really a title contender because I don't think they can beat the Warriors, but I think they are still the favorites to win the East because LeBron exists. He might be more willing to do that just because it's an environment where he's more comfortable in and he's willing to kind of make that sacrifice to win, you know, to have a better chance to win. But like, what do you think about that, about starting him versus starting Rose until Isaiah gets back?
I would do it pretty clearly because I think it helps you solve a problem in that you don't want to play Rose and Wade together. I don't think I think they're just gonna kill your spacing, especially with Tristan Thompson.
The shooting is bad, especially with Tristan Thompson.
Yeah,
like in those lineups, like, I mean, LeBron's still a decent 3-point shooter, like sometimes, but the only real shooter in those lineups would be Kevin Love if you were doing that.
Which kind of works productively to the idea that like Kevin Love maybe could do more this year, which we just don't, you know, we don't know if that's actually going to happen yet, but I would do it, and I think you could definitely still stagger LeBron and Wade, and I think you definitely want to do that to kind of maximize what Wade's going to be. I think I would do it just because I don't think Derrick Rose is that good anymore, and I think Wade's better than him at this point. That's the objective. That's just kind of guesswork a little bit there, you know, if we're being honest. But like, I just think what Wade's going to be able to do, if he is willing to pass and he's willing to kind of shift his game just a bit, I think he can do it. I think the question you would have, and it's not like necessarily a big question in the regular season when the Cavs are really just trying to get in a position where they're a top 3-4 seed, and then they could just smash everybody in the playoffs like they've done. I think they're going to see some version of that, and they're going to bank on that being okay still. Like, how the defense would be interesting because you would have to probably have JR just defend the guy who's going to attack more, because I think you would have to ask him to do that with Wade defending somebody else. There are teams that could certainly take advantage of that. The Warriors, obviously. Boston's going to have interesting guys to attack them in that way. Washington is probably the biggest example in the East because of Beal and John Wall. Toronto, I mean, if you look at Toronto and just Lowry and DeRozan as a duo as well, like, there's some questions there, but if you can deal with that in the beginning of the year, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you can pair Dwayne Wade with other guys. I mean, maybe this is something that gets Amon Shumpert, who I think is probably going to get buried now. Maybe that bumps him ahead of Korver in certain matchups. Maybe it gets certain guys on the floor to defend alongside Wade, in, even if that hurts your spacing a bit. But I think that makes a lot of sense. That Cato piece, listeners, you can find in the show notes of the show. And as a reminder, you can check out all of the Locked On NBA podcasts in one place. Just go on iTunes, search Locked On NBA, and you can find Locked On Cavs, Locked On Bulls, any NBA pod you want to listen to, all in one feed. And go check them out. Give this pod and that a 5-star rating.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Interview while you're there. The other question about Wade that I think is interesting, because I just don't know what we really know. He's in this position where he's definitely not peak Dwayne Wade anymore, and I think everyone has to acknowledge that. But what he was with the Bulls last year was someone who was really, really good in the playoffs, and you're going to know this better than me, but maybe not quite as good in the regular season. Was this someone who was legitimately starting to slow down in a significant way? And we know he's going to have some issues with his knees at this point in his career. I think he's not going to play every night. I wouldn't expect him to. He's going to get some nights off. Or was there something with what was going on with the Bulls, with the three alphas, with Hoiberg's system, with Jimmy Butler? Was there something there that was kind of making him have an off year? And is he maybe poised to do something better this year in Cleveland with LeBron, a star who he's very comfortable with and one of his best friends in the world?
Well, he was a horrible fit on the court with the Bulls with the three alphas. Like, that was always a disaster, like, just from the beginning, just those three together. I think you can play any two of those three together, Rondo, you know, you can play either Rondo with Jimmy or Wade with Jimmy, and you're fine, but playing all three of them together just never a good idea. And I don't think it was, like, it was just the on-court fit as much as it was just kind of Wade's mindset last year was just, he was at the point, like, he had his kind of falling out with Pat Riley. He didn't like the offer that Miami gave him. It's pretty clear that if Pat Riley still wanted him in Miami, he would have still been in Miami last year. He took the Bulls money because he's from Chicago, and they were willing to give him the money because they basically were like, hey, here's a name. Let's sell some jerseys and sell some tickets. Like, that was kind of what drove that signing. But in his mind, like, he gets here the first couple days of training camp, and it's just like a stark contrast from the statement that he put out earlier today when the signing became official, where he was saying, like, I'm looking forward to reuniting with LeBron and compete for a championship. The second or third day of training camp last year, Chris, he said, look, I'm being realistic. I know this team isn't a title contender. And so kind of the whole year, his attitude was, look, I've got three rings. I've been a finals MVP. I've been an all-star. What has he been, like, 11 or 12 time all-star? Whatever the number of all-stars. He has nothing left to prove in his career. He could retire today and be, like, a first ballot Hall of Famer, like, one of the greatest players of all time. He's playing in his hometown. He's getting a huge contract. Like, he was just like, you know what? I'm good. I don't really need to, I can take days off from practice. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm at kind of the victory lap point of my career. That's kind of, and I'm sure he would probably tell you also, like, if you ask him to his face, like, he would tell you, like, that's kind of his mindset. Like, I feel like now he's in Cleveland. He's still getting a ton of money from the Bulls. Like, he gave back $8.5 million, but he's still getting around $16 million from the buyout. So, like, he's with his boy LeBron. He's in a situation where he knows that, like, they're favored to win the East. I think he's going to be a little bit more willing to, like, okay, I'm going to come off the bench. I'm going to play less minutes. I'm going to pick my spots a little bit. I'm going to take some games off. But when it gets time for the playoffs, like, if I have to bring it for three or four rounds in the playoffs, like, I'll be able to do that.
On that note, right now, I just saw this on Twitter, flipping this open. He was on his Snapchat. Him and LeBron.
By the way, just to say, the real winner of this of the Bulls buying out Dwayne Wade is me, because I was able to unfollow. Like, literally, the first thing I did was I unfollowed Gabrielle Union on Snapchat. Like, the first thing I did when the buyout news broke, I was just like, okay, I don't need this for my job anymore.
Look, I mean, the Cavs now have, like, just a deep Snapchat roster of apparently Gabrielle Union, Rich Jefferson, and Channing Frye, who called Kayfelder a gremlin on Wednesday, which is pretty incredible. But Dwayne Wade and LeBron already drinking wine together. LeBron's in a do-rag. We're in for, like, a peak Vino season, I think, with these guys.
And Mamba just, like, mentality, baby.
I'm just, like, really intrigued to see how this affects LeBron, because this is a very... Look, like, you saw this from afar. This was a LeBron James on media day that is as relaxed as I have. Someone who's around them a decent amount, and then you saw other people who are around them more than me travel, you know, and follow the team around the country as they play in California and everything. He was very relaxed and just very confident and just seems very happy and energized for the season. I don't know if it's because, you know, he's motivated because of the finals, if there's some Kyrie aspect to this, if he's just had a really good refreshing offseason in a way he needed to. This is, again, like, one of his best friends, if not his best friend in the world. This is someone who he won titles with, who was, you know, from what we know of his decision, was someone he told on the plane before it kind of got out there and publicly. I, like, wonder how this helps the locker room. This is going to be, like, a different locker room now. Like, I mean, I think just in terms of what we're seeing, like, Wade being connected to LeBron, I don't know how he was with the Bulls last year, but I can't imagine he's going to be a weird locker room fit in this team. Now you not only still have Channing Frye and RJ there to kind of keep things loose, especially if there's no James Jones, but Isaiah is a very different personality than Kyrie. He's going to be a little bit less moody. He's going to be a little bit... He's very publicly excited about what he's going to bring. But I think for LeBron, like, this is this is a good thing for him in how he just is going to feel this year. And I think that is just something that maybe that's not the most important thing. It's not necessarily going to lead to anything direct. But like, I'm very curious just to see how this makes LeBron's season as he goes into his 15th year. Now going up against this team and like how he's kind of blending his two worlds in a way that we haven't necessarily seen.
Well, the Wade locker room fit thing is actually kind of interesting. Wade is not really somebody at the point in his career who has a lot of time for, like, I'm going to mentor these young guys. I'm going to, you know, get to know, like, the eighth or ninth guy on the roster. It might be a little bit different in Cleveland because, like, the eighth or ninth guy on the roster is still, you know, somebody like Channing Frye or Richard Jefferson or Kyle Korver, who's been in the league for a long time. But, like, I can tell you last year in the Bulls locker room, Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler were super tight. Like, they became extremely close friends over the course of the year. You know, Jimmy recruited him heavily over the summer during free agency, and, like, they became tight. Like, Jimmy was actually in Paris with Wade and Carmelo and their significant others when he found out he was getting traded to the Timberwolves. Like, Wade and Jimmy were super tight. But it was kind of, like, there was kind of two factions. It was Jimmy and Wade on one side. And you saw this play out in January, that one time when Wade and Jimmy took turns ripping all their young teammates, and then Rondo came back with the Instagram post kind of taking up for the young guys. But, like, that locker room last year was Wade and Jimmy on one side, who basically had no patience for anybody who wasn't as good as them. And then Rondo as, like, the shepherd of the young guys, like, the Pied Piper of the young guys on the other side. And so, like, And that was like the relationship that Wade had with Jimmy, who was a guy that he probably knew a little bit before that, but like that was a guy he really just met like last year for the first time in terms of like really developing a relationship. Whereas he was with LeBron for 4 years in Miami, and like they were boys before that because they played on the national team together in 2008, and like they were in the same draft class. So those two go way back. Like I wonder if it's gonna be, you know, maybe he'll like just fit into this more like loose thing with, you know, with LeBron than with like Reggie Jefferson. Or is it going to be a thing where, like, LeBron just hangs out with Wade because that's his boy from before he came back to Cleveland, and then it's like, them on one side and everybody else on the other side? Like, I lean towards thinking that, like, everything's going to work out okay. Because, like, I mean, with a team like the Cavs, I'm not as concerned about locker room chemistry as I would be for another team because LeBron is just so good that it, like, supersedes all of that. But it is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. Like, if Wade starts doing passive-aggressive Instagram posts like LeBron. Because LeBron never really did the passive-aggressive stuff to this degree on social media when he was in Miami. Like, that's a new thing the last couple of years. I'm interested to see, like, how Wade approaches that, how he gets in on that. Are they going to have Wade on the road trip and podcast? Like, is that going to be a team bonding exercise? Like, I'm interested to see how it plays out from that standpoint, too.
Wade on road tripping would be great.
He is really good at being the center of attention. I think part of it is because, like, they had that whole media circus when the three of them signed in Miami in 2010. Like, this is nothing to him. And the other thing is that his wife is, like, an actual real-world Hollywood celebrity, like, on a level even greater than, like, a professional athlete. Like, you know, his wife is, like, a famous actor. So he is used to, like, this kind of stuff. And I will say, like, I thought he was kind of, you know, pandering a lot of the time with some of his comments that he made to the media, but he was just always so good last year about, like, if you need a quote from him, he'll give you, like, a really good... I remember, like, last year, I was doing a feature on Cristiano Felicio, the Brazilian kid who's the Bulls' backup center who kind of had a breakout year last year in terms of becoming a rotation player. And I asked Dwayne, like, and, like, at that point in the season, like, I wouldn't have been surprised if Dwayne Wade, if I had asked him about Felicio, and Wade was probably just like, wait, who is that? I have no idea who that kid is. Like, it's not Jimmy Butler. Like, I don't know who any of these young guys are on the team. But, like, he was like, yeah, you know, I actually saw Cristiano Felicio play in a D-League game last year, and I thought, oh, I like that guy. And then I saw him on the Bulls, and I was like, I didn't realize they picked him up, And then he's on the team. Like he gave me there's a 0% chance that Dwayne Wade was watching Cristiano Felicio's D-League game in January of his last year in Miami. There's no chance that's true. But like he is so savvy that he knows that like if you give the media what they want, you give the reporters the quotes that they want, and you know play nice with them, then it's gonna pay off for you down the line. So like him going on road trip and like I think he's fully aware that like that's a good career move for him.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. How do you think this, we've touched on this a little bit, but how do you think this actually impacts the Cavs? Like, does this make them better in some ways? How does it hurt them?
It doesn't really change anything about what I think about their season. I think they're not going to have the best record in the Eastern Conference because I think, you know, Washington and Boston and probably Toronto are going to go harder in the regular season. They could see them being the third or fourth seed. I still think they're the favorites to win the East unless LeBron, like, has a season-ending injury. And I still think they have no chance at beating the Warriors in the finals. That was what I thought before they signed Wade. That's what I think after they signed Wade. Like, I doesn't really move the needle like that. But at the same time, like, the 15th man on the roster, or, like, you know, your guy on the roster, like, this minimum salary, would you rather sign Dwayne Wade for that spot, or you rather sign someone who isn't Dwayne Wade? And related, how much of a waste of a roster spot is Jose Calderon right now? Like, what is the point of him being on the roster now? You got Derrick Rose on the minimum. You've got... And, I mean, Derrick Rose, like, I agree with you, he's not good anymore, but he's a better basketball player in 2017 than Jose Calderon. Like, Jose Calderon legitimately should not be in the league, right? Like that is a waste of a roster spot to me.
Absolute waste of a roster spot with someone they signed on the first day of free agency. And yet, like, the thing about him is, like, he actually can shoot a little bit, and I don't know, I don't think he's going to be in the team. You know, I think if we're looking at what's going on with Dwayne Wade, they have to cut a guaranteed roster guy to make space. They have to move on from somebody. So the candidates that you're looking at would be, you'd have Channing Frye's salary is something that...
See, is Channing Frye expired?
He's on the last year of his contract. So he's someone that you could flip if you want to. I don't think they would do that. Schumpert has one more of his deal, and it's a player option, so he could opt in. And that $10 million salary...
That is a bad contract.
Yeah, it's a bit high for what he is. I think that's certainly a problem. Calderon is the guy that probably ends up getting cut. And I think, like, the other thing with Wade that I think is really interesting, and we touched on this, how he sort of fits in this team and who he actually makes sense with is a question Lou's going to have to figure out. You know, can you play him and Isaiah together? Can you play him and Derrick Rose together? You know, is he best? How effective are him and LeBron?
Question for you. I think Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade together is going to be a disaster. Like, neither of them...
100% agree.
Neither of them can shoot. Neither of them can defend. Wade can still defend when he wants to, but that's going to be, like, one in every 10 games if he's conserving his energy for the playoffs. Like, it's... Like, that is not the move. And, like, obviously Isaiah's not a good defender either, but at least he can shoot. He can bring things offensively that Derrick Rose can't bring anymore. So I could see him and Wade working alongside each other more so than that, just because Isaiah is a threat to hit a deep shot or something like that. But, like... Rose and Wade, like, they need to minimize that as much as possible, putting them on the court together. You have to, I feel like in the backcourt, and I said this earlier, you have to put JR out there for the spacing and for the defense.
100% agree. So, is Wade going to be in the team's closing lineups? Like, if you think about, like, the team on paper at their healthiest, at their best, is he on the floor when they're closing out game one of the finals, if that's where they end up being?
It depends on politically if they can get away with not having him, because if everybody's healthy, the five-man lineup I would go with to close games would be Isaiah, JR, LeBron, Love, and Tristan. That's the most logical thing. Maybe you throw Crowder in there instead of Love for, like, offense-defense substitution or something like that. But those are the five you should have out there. But Wade, you know, is who he is in the league in terms of his stature, and he's LeBron's best friend. Like, can they politically get away with not putting him in the starting lineup? That's the thing I would have. In terms of merit, no, I think he shouldn't be in that closing lineup because I just don't think he fits as much. But, you know, based on the personalities involved and the relationships and stuff, I feel like he might be.
Yeah, I kind of think he might too. I think if we've known one thing, I don't know, like, everything about Lou as a coach. He's very reserved. He hasn't, I think, had a chance to really kind of put his own stamp on some certain things because of what they've had. This year's a test case of that, I think, because I think you're seeing him hint at doing something different than what they've done. I think he very clearly views Isaiah as different than Kyrie, as he should, but I think maybe more drastically than I think most of us might. The one thing I feel confident saying about him is that he very much needs to play guys who maybe they're good enough on defense, but they have to be able to score and be a threat on the other end of the floor. And I think that is something that's going to help Wade. And I think guys are going to trust a veteran like that. I think if you look at just kind of like it, again, it's not fair to just view what he's doing in these simple sort of ways, but if you look at how he's talked about Jeff Green, someone he knows and trusts, he talks about him like he's a rotation player. Chetty Osman is someone he talks about, and he just is sort of dismissive because he doesn't know
you
him.
You totally forget the guys that Jeff Green is played. On his roster, by the way. Like that, I mean, crazy. It's a minimum deal, so it's fine, but I feel like teams should just realize at this point that signing Jeff Green is just generally not the move.
It's a good question. Maybe Lou Celtics, I guess. But would you rather have Derek Williams or Jeff
Honestly,
Green?
Derek Williams was okay for them in stretches last year.
Yeah, he was, and he can like run the floor, and even like Green might be a better shooter, I guess.
That's a pretty brutal question, anyway. Yeah. But like,
But at this point, if you're the
Cavs and your season comes down to whether you'd rather have Jeff Green or Derek Williams, you have bigger problems. In an ideal world, neither of those guys would play at all.
100% agree on that. Like they shouldn't be playing, but I think like you see him trust older veteran guys. I think that's some of the player in him. I really, really do think that is something with him where he does just trust in the veterans he has around him, and I think Wade could be someone that kind of fits that role a little bit. Sean, well, last thing here. You look at Wade. Is there any way you think that he's malleable in some meaningful way? Like, or is he just Dwayne Wade, who is going to attack in the pick and roll and attack in ISO and do what he does? Is he malleable enough to maybe shift into something else? Like I think that maybe more than anything is the big question. Can Dwayne Wade be something different than what he's been and what he tried to be with the Bulls last year?
I think he kind of is what he is, and being in this environment with LeBron, like he's back with, you know, with his best friend in a situation where he's going to have a smaller role. I think the only real adaptation he's going to have to make is not being a starter all of the time and not, you know, being like one of the focal points of the offense and being more of a role player. But in terms of the actual way that he plays, unless he suddenly develops a 3-point shot for real, that isn't just like that 2-week fluke period that they had at the beginning of the season with the Bulls last year, he just kind of is the player that he is. And that's still a very good offensive player a lot of the time, but like, he's not going to be the piece that swings a championship for them, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think just within the locker room, it's interesting because he's going to have Derrick Rose, a guy who very much thinks he's going to be like an MVP player. God. And like there's going to be these battles.
By the way, have fun with the Derrick Rose fans in your mentions this year. Just I'm sure you've already dealt with some of it, but just have fun.
Okay, no, I already got one on Wednesday, and I was just... You know, the thing was like, you know, he asked me if I had food in my mouth while I was podcasting, and I was like, no, like I'm getting over a cold, like I'm a professional here. I don't eat while I podcast, like that's like, who do you think I am? And he was like, why are you so down on D Rose? And I'm like, did you hear? Like, I said it. It like are Derrick Rose or Jeremy Lin stands more aggressive? I guess is kind of my question here. I kind of think it might be Lin, because that's kind of my experience.
The Lin thing is its own animal, just because of, you know, you have like the racial and the cultural elements of that, where like he's the only Asian American player in the NBA, so people are going to defend their guy. Whereas I think with Rose, it's more of a provincial thing, where like people in Chicago just will defend their own guys just for days, like no matter like. People, like, you still, like, in Chicago, I still see so many people, like, around town wearing, like, I see, even last year after he was traded, I still saw more Derrick Rose jerseys than Jimmy Butler. You could argue that the year that Jimmy Butler had last year was a better year, individual season, than Rose's MVP year, like, but I still see more Derrick Rose jerseys in Chicago than Jimmy Butler jerseys. It's not close. Like, there's still, like, and, you know, there's that, you know, territory, the protectiveness of him here, and, you know, that leads a lot of people to want to defend him. And the fact that he is only 28 years old, I personally, like, having watched him up close for several years, I don't think he's ever going to be the player that he was before, but he is only 28 years old. And because you can always, whenever somebody is below 30, you can always say, well, he's only 28, or he's only 27, he's only 29, and you can make the argument that he's still in his physical prime. And so that's something that people maybe are going to cling to a little bit.
That is a crazy to me that like Derrick Rose would have more jerseys in Chicago.
Well, the thing is, the Bulls never believed in Jimmy. Like the whole reason they
never really believed in him,
and so they never pushed him to the fan base because obviously before the injuries, like it was the greatest marketing thing in the world. You could say, hey, you know, local hometown kid from Chicago, he's the next Bulls savior, he's the MVP, he's the, like, all this stuff. Like, you could do that. Like, he is, like, has a special place in Chicago because of that and because of the way he was pushed, you know, early on in his career before, obviously, the injuries kind of changed the trajectory of his career. With Jimmy, he was never supposed to be a star. Like, he wasn't, like, Derrick Rose is one of these guys, like, ever since he was, like, 12, he has been told, like, you're going to be a superstar in the NBA. This is your only focus. Jimmy, you know, took that more circuitous, you know what I mean? Like, he took that more kind of roundabout path to becoming the player that he is, where, you know, he didn't get any D1 scholarship offers, and he had to play junior college before transferring to Marquette, and then he was the 30th pick in the draft, and then he didn't play much his rookie year, and then eventually he became this guy just through work. The Bulls never really, like, were pushing him as, like, this is our next guy. And then when he became that good, like, they still never fully bought into it. And because of that, like, the fans never really embraced him the way that they did with Rose.
Sean, last thing. What are this year's Bulls? Post D. Wade, post the Butler trade. Like, they're a team the Cavs are going to see a couple times. What are the Chicago Bulls in 2017?
A team that's going to be going into June deciding whether they're going to draft Michael Porter, Luka Doncic, or Marvin Bagley. That's what the Bulls are. I actually think they could have some kind of fun lineups. Like, once Zach LaVine gets back, if he is a semblance of what he was before the injury, and everything I've heard is that he's ahead of schedule and his measurables are actually better than they were at the combine. Like, if he's healthy, I think a lot of people are really encouraged by Lauri Markkanen and what he was doing for Finland in Eurobasket this summer. Like, people think he's going to be good. But this team, I think they're going to win, like, 23 or 24 games. If not the worst record in the league, they're going to be, like, in the mix for that with, you know, Atlanta and Phoenix and Brooklyn and some of these other teams. They're going to be really, really, really bad. And that's the plan. Like, you trade Jimmy Butler, the rest of this roster, like, I think Markkanen is going to be good. I think LaVine is going to be good once he gets back. I like Zipser, but not as, like, a starter on a good team. I like him as a role player and a rotation player. And then, you know, you have to hope that, like, Chris Dunn isn't as bad as he was last year in Minnesota. You have to hope that, like, Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis are, you know, take that next step forward. And, you know, that stuff could very well happen. Like, I'm not ready to completely write any of those guys' careers off yet, except for Cameron Payne. I don't think Cameron Payne is going to be in the league in February.
Yeah, Cameron Payne will forever be just known as Russ's dancing partner.
But, like,
anymore. Like, that is Campaign's
right, but, like, okay, so, like, the Bulls, like, their whole plan is they're going to suck this year. They're going to get, like, Michael Porter or Luka Doncic or whoever it is by the end of next year in the draft, and that's going to be their guy. Like, whoever their next guy is who's, like, their franchise player is not on the roster right now. Like, this rebuild may pay off eventually, but this year is going to be pretty ugly for them.
Yeah, it's – I mean, maybe – I don't know if they have any TNT games, but maybe they'll win those at least.
Their only national TV game is – on February 9th, Jimmy Butler's return to Chicago with the Timberwolves, and that's on ESPN. That's their only national game the whole year. And frankly, I mean, I know the Bulls are a big market and stuff, but like, why should the Bulls be on national TV? This team is going to be really horrible to watch for the most part. Like, the only intriguing game they have is the Jimmy Butler game, and that's the one that's on national TV. That makes sense.
Yeah, I try to watch like every team, and that's just the one of the teams I just don't know how to get excited.
Well, there
about
are
it, te- really.
There are teams like, I'm less excited about than know. The Bulls. Like, I have zero desire to watch the Orlando Magic whatsoever.
I mean, look, like, no one ever really wants to watch the Magic unless they're a Magic fan. Like,
I think even Magic fans, my buddy Eddie Rivera, who used to be a Magic blogger for True Hoop, like, the last one point last year, they lost, the Magic were in Chicago and they lost, like, the Bulls blew them out, like, 120-75 or something ridiculous like that. And I texted Eddie and I'm just like, how do you watch this team? And he's just like, I've stopped watching them. I don't even care anymore. Like, they've been, so this is what I think Bulls fans are worried about with this trade, is if you look at what Orlando was, after they trade Dwight Howard, and you know you can go into the Dwight thing is a whole other conversation about whether they cut bait with him at the right time, just given the way his career has played out. That's a different discussion. But they traded Dwight Howard 5 years ago. Since then, not only have they not made the playoffs, they haven't come close to making the playoffs, and they don't even have somebody on their roster where you can look at it and be like, oh, hey, well, at least like this is our next franchise guy. Like, I think Aaron Gordon's pretty good, but he's like a good complimentary player. He's not like, this is our number one guy, this is who we're building around. They still haven't found that guy. The Bulls are kind of in that same spot. Like, they traded Jimmy Butler. He was clearly their best player. They better hope that they get their next star in one of these next couple drafts, or that like Lauri Markkanen or Zach LaVine turns into that guy, or else it could become this ugly years-long saga like Orlando, where they're just completely irrelevant, not bad enough to get the number one pick, not good enough to be seriously competing for a playoff spot even in the East. Like they need to hope they don't end up being that.
Yeah, that would be... Right, it'll be interesting to see how they rebuild, if Hoiberg lasts or not.
Well, Hoiberg is getting this year at the minimum.
I think he
will go into next training camp as the head coach, and then beyond that, you know, who knows? But like the thing you have to remember about the Bulls is they signed Hoiberg to a 5-year deal, so he's got 3 years left on his deal, $5 million a year. They do not like paying people to not work for them. They had to get as bad as it got with Tom before they fired him with 2 years left on his deal. And even then, like, they knew that somebody was going to pick him up and that money would offset. Like, with Hoiberg, like, I think everybody kind of acknowledges, like, he hasn't been great these last 2 years, but he got kind of a raw deal in terms of the roster that was given to him. Like, that first year, they brought him in and sold him as, like, we're going to still be a championship contender. We're going to play this up-tempo style, but they kept the roster the exact same as what it was under Tom Thibodeau, who plays like a completely opposite style. And then the next year, they trade Rose, and they let Noah walk, and they were like, hey, we're going to get you. They let Gasol walk. They're like, hey, we're going to get younger and more athletic. And then they go out and sign Rondo and Wade. They're going to give him at least one full year of, this is young guys who actually fit your system, who are going to be able to play up-tempo. There's no star egos to manage. And see how it goes. And if they feel like, you know, the players develop, the young guys get better, you know, everyone knows going in, management knows, Hoiberg knows, the whole team, everybody knows they're going to win like 20 to 25 games this year. Like, they're not going to fire Hoiberg because they're 5-17 or whatever in January. Like, it's going to be based on, like, did the young guys get better? You know, is this headed in the right direction? I think there's virtually no chance he gets fired during this year, and I think there's a pretty good chance he at least starts next season as the coach.
Would have been really interesting to see Wade on the team at the beginning of the year, but I can't imagine that actually would have happened. It seemed like it might have, but it just seemed like with everything that's changed with them, it was going to be hard for him to go back to that with no other star, with a guy you know that he developed a friendship with in Butler. That would have been interesting, but he's now in Cleveland, and it'll be very interesting to see how he does fit with LeBron for the second time around. A little bit older, different situation, and if he helps them kind of complete a goal of them both winning another title, and we'll see what that all means.
I still don't think there's any chance they beat the Warriors, honestly. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know this.
I don't either, but you have LeBron, and I think like that's what you're talking yourself into, is that you have LeBron, and he's still very, very good. Like, it probably doesn't matter.
The Warriors
like,
got better it's than one they of were last year. Like, they got Omri Caspi for the minimum.
Yeah.
Like, Swaggy is going to just come off the bench and get buckets for them. I think Jordan Bell is going to actually play minutes for them. Like the Warriors are somehow better than they were last year, which is terrifying.
Well, let me ask you this. Thunder, Cavs, Spurs, Rockets, say the Celtics in there as well, just so we have a second East team. What team has the best chance of actually beating the Warriors?
I'm kind of in on this Oklahoma City team just because of the defense. Like, you throw out a lineup. Like, obviously, Russ isn't a very good defender. Melo's not a very good defender. But you have three good defenders in that starting lineup. You've got Robertson. You've got Paul George. You've got Steven Adams. And then, you know, they have a good bench. Like, they've got Patrick Patterson coming off the bench. I think Abrines is fine. Like they've got guys. Like I'm kind of in on Oklahoma City. I don't think anybody's beating the Warriors. Like I think it's ridiculous to even like entertain the notion that anyone's going to beat the Warriors in the playoffs this year. But I like them in Houston.
I think I would go OKC 1, Cleveland 2, Houston 3, San Antonio 4, Boston 5.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I'm kind of out on the Spurs. I realize that's a sacrilegious thing to say, but I'm kind of, like, outside of Kawhi, like, I'm not impressed with that roster. And they're probably going to win 60 games somehow just because it's Pop and it's Kawhi, and, like, they always find a way to do that. But, like, I don't see the Spurs being any better equipped to beat the Warriors than they were last year.
I don't either, and I think the other teams at least have some flexibility that they can bank on, and some things that they can do that are a little more flexible and can match some of that Golden State style in a way. And again, like maybe somebody gets hurt, like maybe Curry hurts his ankle or something like that, and that opens a door. But it might take something like that. But I think the Cavs, I think, are banking on, and I think the Thunder are doing this too. I think it's very clear that all these teams are they're a select group of teams, and it's Cleveland, it's Houston. It's not so much Boston, it's OKC. They're going in on the Warriors and trying to beat them right now. And I think that at least makes it things more interesting this year than teams.
You don't
want to
just say, oh, well, we're not going to beat the Warriors, so we're not even going to try. You have to at least, if you're in a position where you're close, I feel like you have to at least take a swing at it. Like, with this Oklahoma City trade, maybe everybody's going to leave next summer. You know, Paul George and Russ and Mel, maybe they're all leave next summer. But for this one year, you'd still rather have, you know, take a run at it with those three, then be like, okay, now we lost Russ and Paul George, and we still have this Enes Kanter. Like, it's worth, even though, like, you can say, okay, maybe this is just a one-year experiment, or, you know, same thing in Houston with the Chris Paul trade. Like, even if it's a one-year experiment, this one-year experiment is a better swing to take than having a bunch of, you know, more mediocre pieces that are going to be there more long-term. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see. I mean, we'll see how this all turns out. I think teams are going to have to get lucky. But, Sean, thanks so much for coming on. Real quick, just give everyone a plug about where they can
find you.
Yeah, you can
follow me on Twitter, at Hyken. You can check out Locked On Bulls on the Locked On Podcast Network, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, everywhere else. I co-host that with my buddy Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Go check that out if you want some Lowry Marketing analysis in January.
Yeah, if that'll be the place you want to go. Make sure you subscribe to all the pods again on Lockdown NBA and subscribe to Lockdown Cavs. We'll give those pods both 5-star ratings and reviews. And we'll be back tomorrow, another episode of the podcast. I will be at practice Thursday to see what Wade speaks. They haven't said specifically that he will talk, but he's supposed to. He's officially announced. Should be his first official practice on Thursday in Independence. And we'll be there. We'll see what he has to say. We'll do a Facebook Live on Fear the Swords page right after that, and you'll hear more on the pot on Friday. But we'll talk again then. For myself, for Sean Hyken, it's been Locked On Cavs. Talk to you guys again tomorrow.